The True False Film Festival is coming up next month in Columbia, Missouri. It's a documentary film festival that in 2004, its first year, drew approximately 1,500 attendees. Last year, almost 50,000 came out. David Wilson and Paul Sturtz are the festival's co-directors, and David Wilson joins us now on the phone from Columbia, Missouri. Welcome to St. Louis on the Air, David.
Hey, it's good to be here. Thank you.
You describe yourself and Mr. Sturtz as co-conspirators. So what does that suggest?
I think from the early days, we've seen this as a project that a lot of people make possible. And it's something that we, you know, sort of are at the middle of and have our fingers in a lot of pots, but we really see the fest having not just staff, but really the whole city of Columbia makes this possible.
And I was sort of looking at the timeline of past festivals, and it seemed you've consistently grown each and every year. Did that surprise you at all?
We didn't know what to expect. You know, we had started the Ragtag Cinema here in Columbia, and that was off to a sort of a good start. And then it was a huge leap of faith to think that maybe a documentary film festival would take hold. The first year when we had 4,400 tickets, that felt great. We thought that was amazing, and you know, maybe we could do a little bit better than that. So now to be looking back, you know, where this year we expect to have over 50,000, that's pretty remarkable to us.
I think it is remarkable. And with 50,000 in a city the size of Columbia, obviously a lot of these people are coming from out of town. Do you have any idea about that?
We do. Our best guesses show that about 40% of our audience comes from outside of the mid-Missouri area. If you want to break that down further, again, most of those people are coming from the St. Louis, Kansas City, and then a few other places sort of drivable. And then about, 10 or 15% of the total audience is flying in from New York or L.A. or London or wherever.
No kidding. Wow. Well, the True False Film Festival is exclusively documentary. Isn't that unusual for a film festival?
Yeah, I think, every festival, I think, kind of finds their own niche. And we knew from the start that we wanted to have a very focused, a very tightly curated lineup. We talk about ourselves sometimes as a sort of boutique festival for documentary. We only show 35 feature films. That's small for a lot of festivals. But for us, we think that really lets us focus and really hones our curation.
Was it ever sort of a hard sell just to have a documentary film festival? I mean, there was a time, I don't think it's true anymore, but documentaries were seen as sort of dry and more like informational.
Yeah. When we first started, there were a lot of questions. One of our earliest backers for the fest was the local Convention and Visitors Bureau, but even they sort of said, I know you like documentaries, but we should have like some movie stars too, right? And I think it took a few years for people to really see the benefits and kind of the reasoning behind us wanting to really have that tight focus.
And would you say the creativity of documentaries has improved over the year, become more interesting, perhaps?
Absolutely. We started doing this fest for these reasons because we saw a moment in 2002, 2003, where suddenly there was a bunch of really theatrical nonfiction films coming out. We saw Bowling for Columbine, we saw Winged Migration, we saw Spellbound, we saw Capturing the Freedmans, and we thought these are movies that you want to see in a theater, you want to see with other people, you want to watch and then discuss after the fact. So that felt really natural to us. What we didn't fully anticipate is that, thanks in part to True False, we would be able to push forward and kind of expand what people thought documentaries could be.
Right. And what surprises people most about documentaries?
I think for the neophytes, like how much they feel like movies. That's what we're looking for. We're looking for movies that can thrill people, can make them laugh, can make them cry. We're looking for crime thrillers and action movies and, dramas and historical films. We just put all of those in the umbrella of nonfiction rather than fiction.
It occurs to me also, David, that perhaps a documentary film festival is maybe more appropriate in Columbia, Missouri than other places. I was just thinking about the University of Missouri and the School of Journalism, so somehow that seems to make sense.
Sure, and there's a storied and great journalism program here, and it's been really cool over the years to kind of form different partnerships with them. And, a few years ago, they created the Murray Center for Documentary Journalism, and now there's actually like a whole sort of strand of classes and education for kids, for young people in the J School who are exploring documentary and what that means to make documentary and are actually learning from some of the best documentary filmmakers in the world.
Are you and your co-conspirator, are you journalists or filmmakers?
I'm a filmmaker, and he has a background in journalism, as well as having also made some films himself. So when we're not working on the fest, we definitely both do a few other things too.
Well, explain true-false. I mean, what does that mean? Because, you know, reality is usually neither one.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. It was in some ways an ironic name that we started with. We thought, you know, every one of these films, and really everything all of us watch, whether it's, you know, Harry Potter or the Nightly News, these are things that have some truth and some fiction to them. And, you know, one of the early projects of True False that feels more relevant than ever now is to have people be active viewers, to have people question what they're watching, to have people be media literate. So, yeah, we think the name is kind of a constant reminder that no matter what you're watching, you should always be looking at it somewhat critically.
Yeah, explain that a little bit more to me, because I always think of a documentary as being 100% accurate. So how accurate does a documentary have to be?
Well, I think you can look at it a few different ways. You know, I think all films are subjective. They are coming from a point of view, and no matter how much that, you know, filmmaker is striving for a kind of journalistic objectivity, there's still going to be their own experiences, their own perspective that informs it. I like the word honesty. I think that helps in watching documentary films. I can often gauge whether I think a filmmaker is being honest to their experience, to the kind of story as they understand it. Maybe it's easier to gauge that than accuracy and sort of whether 100% of the details are exactly as they happened.
So even in a documentary, you might find some alternative facts?
Well, I think, you know, I think that idea is actually really important. I think that, you know, I look at these filmmakers, and documentary filmmakers tend to be incredibly serious, more serious than people probably give them credit for, about both accuracy and, like I said, about honesty. You know, if I, you know, have a shot that I think conveys an emotion, and, you know, it may be out of timeline with the story I'm telling, but it gets the emotion right for that moment to make you feel this is what it felt like in that moment, then I think I'm being fair and honest to the story as I'm telling it. I don't think that's really what the idea of alternative facts or lies, probably better said, is really about.
Uh-huh. We're talking with David Wilson of the True False Film Festival in Columbia. It's a four-day festival, David, beginning on Thursday, March the 2nd. And the films run at multiple times. Talk a little bit about how it's set up.
Sure. The entire fest is set up to be walkable. It all takes place in downtown Columbia. We have 9 screens at 8 different venues, but nothing's more than a few blocks apart. And over the course of those 4 days, really starting Thursday night and going all the way through Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, we'll have 140 different screenings. Each film will show 3, sometimes 4 times, and people kind of can make their path through the festival. Some folks might just want to do a day and see 3 or 4 films in a day. We have other folks who try to see as many as possible and usually end up seeing about 18 over the course of the fest.
Are the venues significant?
We try for every venue to have its own personality. Only a few of our venues are year-round venues, so the rest we're building out for the festival. And we kind of give them names and personalities. We have the Forest Theater, which is decorated like a forest. The Picture House Theater features larger-than-life-size video projections of local Colombians on the wall. And the venues range in size from about 65 seats all the way up to 1,700 seats at Jesse Hall.
And you say all the theaters are walkable, so that must be part of the design. You're encouraging people maybe to take in a couple at one time and all the rest of that?
Yeah, exactly. We want people to be able to kind of come downtown and then really be able to camp out. All the downtown restaurants are open throughout the fest. There's a real air of a festival. And I hear from many people that, you know, the encounters they have on the streets or the encounters they have while waiting in line to get into a film are some of their favorite moments from the fest experience.
Let me ask you about a couple of the films that you're going to be screening this year. And one I think that would be of particular interest to a lot of people in the St. Louis area is the film about Ferguson. And it recently screened at Sundance.
Yep. This is a film called Whose Streets. And, you know, it's probably about as close to rip from the headlines as you get in the documentary world. You know, documentaries take time. They don't just happen right away. And often if people rush them, they don't turn out as well. And I think with Whose Streets, we're seeing a story that it still feels pretty current to all of us. We're also going back to that early discussion. This is a partisan film. I mean, it is unapologetically on the side of the protesters. But I think that no matter who you are, no matter kind of what your political perspective is, when you come to a film like this, you can't help but also be able to walk a mile in someone else's shoes. The way that it makes fully fledged humans out of protesters who maybe we only saw in the TV news, you know, holding a sign or shouting at a police officer. And now we actually see the depths of their lives and really what they've sacrificed and are giving up to fight for something they believe in. I think it creates a lot of empathy.
Is most of it like from the TV news coverage of it, or?
No, I think it goes much deeper than that. I think it starts with, you know, some of the TV news coverage, but there are scenes and events that most people have not seen, and it really shows kind of past the first flash of action how a community responds.
There's another movie called Long Strange Trip, and it's about the old rock band, the Grateful Dead. But I understand this is one long movie.
It is. It's 4 hours long. You know, I'm actually not a big Grateful Dead fan, but I can say that I think this is one of the definitive rock documentaries of all time. It's a film that really feels of the band. It has, you know, it opens in their kind of like hazy psychedelic early days, and the film has that hazy psychedelic feel to it. It charts the whole journey from, you know, the mid '60s and really getting a sense of even, you know, before then, you know, what influenced Jerry Garcia? How did he become the man he became, the sort of shamanic figure he became? And it follows the band all the way up to almost present day.
Uh-huh. And is it totally flattering?
No, not at all. I think it, you know, it does a pretty great job of kind of suggesting some of the interpersonal relationships, some of the ways in which the tolls of being a band like that took on the people involved.
There's another film. I need you to explain this to me because it's fascinating. Evidently, you're collecting proceeds somehow during the film, and it actually goes to the people that are in the film. The name of it is Quest.
Yeah, you know, we started this thing called the True Life Fund years ago, and the idea was, you know, we found ourselves watching stories, watching films, seeing people on screen, and just, you know, because we admired those people or, you know, they created some level of feeling that made us want to support them, wanted to find a way really to thank them for giving us their story. And what maybe a lot of people don't realize is, you know, when you're the subject of a documentary film, you're not paid, and in fact, there's often a huge cost, whether that cost is actually financial or personal. It's usually not an experience that people come out the other side with saying, like, well, I feel great about that. And so, but, you know, there are stories that have to be told, and there's people who give themselves to let us into their lives and tell those stories. And so we started this fund as a way to kind of say thank you.
Yeah.
And the funds are raised mostly by passing the hat at screenings. People make donations right there or online. And all of that money raised goes to the people we see on screen. And these have become some of the greatest screenings, some of the greatest films of true false history. And Quest is certainly worthy. And the family at the heart of it, this family in North Philadelphia who run a recording studio out of their basement, are a family that really inspired me when I saw the film.
Interesting idea. Another film has a subject matter that a lot of people will be creeped out by because rats. It's about rodents.
It's a tough subject matter for some folks.
Yeah.
You know, that film, I think, does this unique thing, which is it takes a lot of different ingredients, a lot of different tools from the filmmaker's handbook. It is at times feels like an experimental film. It feels like a portrait film. It uses archival historical footage as well as very contemporary footage, all of it built around making this argument about the conjoined history of rats and people. And I think it's this film that you get to the end of it thinking, like, how are they possibly going to pull this off? And then it just, the argument congeals, and you think, wow, I hadn't thought about it that way before.
Yep.
It's a really cool film, and I think once you get over that hump of squeamishness, people are going
to
like it.
I can relate to that a little bit because at one time I actually had rats for pets, and I know they are very intelligent, they can be affectionate, and they're a lot better pet than a mouse.
Yeah.
Am I right?
Yeah, exactly.
What about these secret screenings you're doing?
So, you know, the secret screenings are the sort of funny thing we made up, and they've now become part of the fabric of the festival. They are films who will come out later in the year, often at another, maybe larger film festival. They're films that we fell in love with and thought, you know, we need to find a way to screen this. And so we came up with this idea. The secrecy is always kept. We ask the audience to basically be our partners in keeping that secrecy so we can keep doing these screenings. You know, these are some of our favorite films that we love so much. We figured we had to find some way to show them. And so that's how they become secret screenings.
That's a neat idea. There's one more film I'd like to ask you about, David, because it has a St. Louis connection, and I'd like you to explain that. Stranger in Paradise.
Yeah, you know, this Stranger in Paradise is an incredibly provocative film about the refugee crisis in Europe. And with some of our films, we have a new program called Provocations, where we actually pair a live speaker with a film. Now, they're not talking about the film specifically. They're talking about whatever they are interested in. With that film, though, we've paired Sarah Kendzior, who may be familiar to a lot of your audience. Sarah has a background studying autocratic regimes in some of the former Russian republics, Soviet republics. And she's going to be coming to the Fest to deliver this provocation in advance of that film.
Well, as part of the True False Film Festival, David, I know it's not just films. You have other activities, discussions, and things. But I want to ask you about a parade I heard about, and somehow your head figures in it.
You've hit on one of the most embarrassing parts of my life. We have a parade called the March March. It is an annual tradition. It's the world's only documentary parade. For many people, it might be the highlight of the festival. It's participatory. Anybody can come and join. People dress up. There are no motorized floats. There are no commercial or political messages beyond that. People are free to kind of come up with what they want. It's become a great moment in the Fest. But a couple of years ago, I was surprised, I can't say delighted, but surprised at least to see an effigy of both Paul's head and my head coming down the street. So it took me a while to get over it, but I've come to see it as, you know, part of giving the Fest to other people is them coming up with their own crazy ideas.
Was it as bad as watching that rat movie?
It was so much worse than the rat movie.
And I'll tell you what, we're going to post a picture of the representation of your head on our website, just in case people want to see that, David.
Okay. That's embarrassing also, but sure.
Well, what you're doing is really unique and fun, particularly for this part of the country. We wish you continued success with the True False Film Festival. Thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
That's contributor Steve Potter talking with David Wilson, the co-conspirator of the Documentary Film Festival in Columbia, Missouri, that runs from March 2nd through March 5th. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. I'm Maria Altman. Thanks for joining us.